Blog Talk Radio.
Yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Wednesday, January 22nd, and I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
The Green Chicken Coop Company designs and builds coops for all breeds of poultry. They are the only coop builder in the country that offers an unlimited range of enclosed, predator-proof runs. Their traditionally designed, classic chicken coops are the envy of many serious chicken fanciers. The health and production of your flock is their main concern. Green Chicken Coop Company is a proud sponsor of the Chicken Whisperer's January Ultimate Chicken Coop Contest. Visit their website at www.greenchickencoop.com or call them at 989-714-7515 for more information. That's greenchickencoop.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice
continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Really feels like Monday to me because we were off for a couple of days. We had a very unfortunate trip we had to make Saturday. Around Saturday, about 10 minutes until 11 a.m., I heard from my cousin that my uncle had passed away that morning, and we were very close. He was, he meant a lot to me. We were a lot alike, and he's been involved in my life since day one. And so we visit him all the time, and we come to Florida many, many times. And so we just took about 2 hours to pack everything up and the kids, everything that we would need, and took off. Thank goodness we were somewhat close, a lot closer than if we would have been at home at the homestead, a three-hour drive. And we got there and spent a Saturday, Sunday, and Monday with them. We left yesterday morning and got back here yesterday afternoon. So, I guess death is always, a sad time, but it was unexpected. It wasn't, he was dealing with an illness or was in the hospital, or it was just he failed to wake up one morning. And unfortunately, it was his birthday. He was born on the 18th. Of February, and he passed on the 18th of February. And what made matters worse was his wife, my aunt, they've been married 51 years. Her birthday was the very next day, the 19th. So they always celebrated their birthdays together. And now it's it'll always be a bittersweet time, if you will. So, but we got through that. We may be going back up on the 1st of February, which is a Saturday. Go up Friday, Saturday. They may end up having the service. I'm still waiting to hear back then, but I'm glad I could go because we were really the only quote unquote family that was there, other than their immediate family, their daughter and their son-in-law and their grandkids. Lots of friends, of course. Lots of food was brought, and condolences and cards and flowers. But I was glad that they had some family there as well. Just we didn't do much, but just be there and support them. So, but we got through that, and today is another day, and we move on with our lives. So, but I thank you all for posting your condolences on my Facebook page over that time. It was welcomed, and I really appreciate it. So we've got a great show lined up for you today. Since we didn't have Peter on Monday and Tuesday we were on the road, we are going to have Peter Brown today, also known as the Chicken Doctor, and he's going to be basically answering questions from our listeners, from people in the chat room, and questions that were posted on Facebook. We had a lot posted on Facebook yesterday, more than enough. I can assure you we'll not get to all of them today, but we never know when we post how many we're going to get. So I just posted it one time, and we probably had 40 questions. Some may overlap. I haven't really reviewed them yet. It's been a busy morning playing catch-up, but we'll get to as many as we can. Also, during the show, if you have a question, once we bring him on, if you'll post it, if you're in the chat room live, if you post it in the chat room, your question in all capital letters, I'll try to see it. Sometimes it's tough when I'm running the switchboard and paying attention to Peter and running things, but if you'll post your question in all caps, you may have to do it again, so I apologize. But then that way we'll try to get your question on the air. So we'll be taking questions from Facebook and Twitter, folks, and chat room. And if you call in live with a question, you get to sent to the front of the line. So if you call in, 347-637-3237, when you call in, press 1 when you're instructed to do so to speak to the host, and you will go to the front of the line. So your wait will be minimal. I'm going to post that on Facebook here shortly when Peter joins us, so we've got that going on. I want to mention as well about the awesome Ultimate Chicken Coop Contest we have going on right now. There's only 9 more days to actually enter. All the information is posted on our Facebook and Twitter accounts, our pages there. And I will tell you how to enter right now if you haven't followed us on Facebook or Twitter. The grand prize package in January, we've got 1 grand prize winner. And it is a grand prize package valued at $2,844. It includes an amazing chicken coop with a walk-in run with many upgrades and shipping, and free shipping, from Green Chicken Coop. You heard their commercial at the beginning of the show. It includes that. I also found out that they will paint it whatever color you want to match your house. And that's another custom feature. How cool is that? I've got to share that on Facebook a little later as well. It also includes an incubator from GQF, a brooder heater from Brincy, 3 autographed books, It includes a $100 gift card from Tractor Supply, I think a $75 gift card from McMurray Hatchery, a $75 gift card from Stromberg's, or 25 baby chicks, your choice. Holy cow, let's see what else. A Redoodles original signed watercolor piece of artwork, which is absolutely stunning. It got tons of comments when I posted that. And I'm probably forgetting somebody, and if I am, I apologize, but tons of great prizes valued at a total of $2,844. Now, to enter, you can only enter one time, but if you and your husband have different emails, then he can enter too. So you can enter with your email. He can enter with his email. Duplicate emails will be deleted. You'll be disqualified if you try to enter more than once. So one email per person. You could have your entire subdivision where you live enter, as long as it's all different email addresses, and if somebody wins in your subdivision, they can have it shipped right to you. So very, very simple. No problem there. We do not sell the email addresses or any of that information. I'm going to tell you how to enter in a minute. You will probably receive one email from me when the contest is over thanking you for participating, and that's probably all it will have in there. So then that's it. And then the next day I delete them all. So far, over 14,000 people have officially entered, and we expect that to grow probably close to 17,000 as the day gets near, maybe even 20,000 if we're lucky. But nonetheless, this is how you enter. You need to send an email, one email, and make sure you put everything in the email because you can't send it again, you'll get disqualified. So send an email to contest@chickenwhisperer.com, okay? contest@chickenwhisperer.com. In the subject line of the email, please type Coop Contest. In the email itself, we need your name, shipping address, and phone number. Okay, that's all we need. So send an email again to contest@chickenwhisperer.com. Put Coop Contest in the subject line there of the email. And then in the email itself, we want you to put your name, your shipping address, and your phone number, because we're going to have a special Friday episode on January 31st, and I will call live on the air the winner. We may or may not get in touch with them. Either way, they're going to win. You don't have to be listening live or pick up the phone to win. You are the winner. But it is always fun. We've done this in the past. We've given away a gazillion chicken coops over the last 5 years. And it's always fun when we can get a live caller on and announce and say that they won this contest. It's amazing. So that's the way it works, folks. The contest technically ends Thursday, January 30th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I will announce the winner and call them live on the radio show. And then after the radio show, I'll post it on Facebook, the winner of this grand prize package. Now, I've started to develop the other chicken coop contest. Yes, we have another awesome contest in February and in March and in April. If you didn't see last night, I have very close, it hasn't been 100% confirmed, but we're very close to adding another coop company and coop contest in May. So how cool is that? But I think due to popular demand, because I let our Facebook fans vote, that in February there'll be one coop winner, and then the other prizes we have will be distributed to maybe a second place, third place, fourth place. So we'll just see how that works and how difficult or easy that might be to do. So February will be more of a spread the chicken love around, but then March we may go back to the one grand prize winner and then vice versa and alternate. So we'll just have to see, but we try to be creative with the contests so everybody can have a good chance, whether they Facebook, Twitter, whatever. I mean, you have to send an email, so I guess you have to have an email address on the computer. You can go to the library and do that if you don't own one and get a free email at Hotmail or something, but we try to keep it so most everybody can enter. So gotta love that. So that's all about the coop contest. And let me see. Yep, there we go. We've got Peter Brown, who has called in, and he is the founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. If you haven't visited his site, you need to. He's got anything you'd ever need. We often say if he doesn't have it, you don't need it. FirstStateVetSupply.com, also known as the Chicken Doctor. And let's go ahead and give him a big round of Chicken Whisperer applause. Hey, wait a minute. Yeah, wow, we're getting a lot of them now. A little computer delay there, so let's see if the switchboard's going to work now. Don't you love that little thing that just spins around and around and around and around and around? See if this is going to work. It always seems to happen at noontime. Let me try this again. See if we can. Okay, there we go. Hey, Peter, welcome.
Hey, Andy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Like I said, we've got 50 phone lines, and a lot of them are already, not a lot of them, maybe a dozen of them are full right now. So let me explain this to folks. If you've called in to listen, welcome. If you're listening live via the computer, welcome. If you're in the chat room, welcome. Thank you for tuning in. If you're called in to listen, just hang tight. You're doing exactly what you should be doing. If you want to have a question and you want to come live on the air and ask your question for Peter and myself, then what you want to do is press 1 when instructed to do so. If you just want to listen to the show via telephone, fine. Just hang out, no problem. No worries there at all. But if any time during the show you do have a question you'd like to ask, then we want you to press 1, and that'll put a little icon next to your phone number and let me know that you want to have a question and want to come on the air for Peter. And live callers go to the top, the first of the line, and they're the front of the line, and so your wait shouldn't be too long by doing so. I'm going to post that on Facebook as well. And so if you're just listening by phone, thank you, welcome. I see all of you guys, and just do what you're doing. But at any time, if you do have a question, press the number 1 on your phone, and that'll put a little icon next to your number and let me know you want to come on come live. So, Peter, if let's see, if you want to tell us very briefly about the poultry show this weekend that you attended, we'd love to hear that, but we've got a boatload of questions to get to.
Yeah, I'll try to keep it brief. We were at the Springfield Northeast Poultry Congress show, which had right around 4,000 birds there. I think it was short of that, but it was a pretty good show. When I say pretty good, it's really one of the best shows around from my perspective. Since I'm not an exhibitor of poultry there or any other show, we tend to hear all the complaints and so on and so forth. And we didn't really hear any at that show. We hardly ever do. If we do, it's usually some little minuscule thing that somebody being nitpicky, but it is a good show. A lot of folks attended it. A lot of off-street traffic there for the local folks coming in. They promote it pretty heavily there at that show. They show people themselves, the people that run the show. They during the summer, I think it's in September, I can't remember exactly, but there's I think it's at least 3 or 4 weeks long, a fair there called the Big E right at that complex, and they promote very heavily the fancy and chickens in general and stuff, and they have chicks to sell, I believe, there as well during that period of time. So it's pretty well promoted along those lines. Got to see a lot of folks that I don't normally see on a regular basis, and just a good time for everybody. But I will say this to folks: it's shows are no different than any other show anywhere else when it comes down to buying birds, knowing what you're buying, and you know, the calls are already rolling in from those who bought birds there that were sick, brought them home. Now everybody's sick. We said it once, and we'll continue to say it on this show, and try to drive the point home. Doesn't matter if the person you're buying them from is the best well-known judge in the world or the best well-known breeder in the world. And I'm not pointing fingers at anybody. I'm just telling you, you need to be careful what you buy, where you buy it, how you buy it, and you need to pay attention to those birds when you're picking them up. And I know that it's an opportunity for people to get birds that they wouldn't normally have access to, but it's also an opportunity for you to bring home a disease that you never had access to before either. And so, you know, that being said, there are several people that have come away from that show and brought birds home that appear, at least at this point, to possibly have laryngotracheitis and things like that. And these are probably vaccine-induced diseases that came from using a chick embryo-type vaccine. So you just need to do your due diligence. We've talked about it on the show numerous times, and like I said, we'll continue to do so. And I don't want to belabor the point, but it was a great show. Loads and loads of great people. Their hospitality there, as far as I'm concerned, is second to none. And that's a great facility. And they have plenty of people around on hand who wear colored vests so you can see who they are, so you know you can walk up to somebody who is associated with the show and get things hopefully straightened out as to whether it's cooping in, cooping out, or whichever. So great show. Met some great people. Met a whole lot of people I'd never met before. One of them happens to be the folks that you're probably negotiating, I'm thinking about, with the coop. I will just say this. You know, I've seen a lot of people with coops of all different kinds of descriptions. These are unique. If you are trying to get birds into your area, in your neighborhood, and you want to enhance your property, these coops these folks produce are second to none as far as I'm concerned. I went down, looked them over, was very, very impressed with the engineering, the overall workmanship of them, the quality of the lumber put into them. Look, in this world, you get what you pay for. Very few times does something come along that's a bargain that is so heavily discounted. These are just awesome, and I don't know what else to say about them. The engineering on them, especially the one that I was really taken back by, was the one where it has a run attached to it, but you open it up from the side, and it opens up. Easy to clean, the nest box right there, and a lot of these things, the other ones that the look like the Hobbit deal, when you open the door in the back, the nest box attached to it, and it has a way of rolling right out. And if you're in a hurry, pick your eggs up, close it back up, and you're done, and you can go on about your business and come back and feed and water later or whatever. It's pretty cool. Really good setup, really well engineered, well thought out. Real nice folks to talk to and deal with and so on. So, I would encourage anybody that's looking for something of that kind of value to seriously give it some consideration. Really worth the money from my perspective. Yep.
Oh, very good. I want to read you something here that was posted on my Facebook page. You just mentioned the importance of biosecurity, regardless of where you get your birds, when we preach it till we're blue in the face on this show. I'm just going to read you what somebody posted on 2 days ago, okay, regarding biosecurity. It says, biosecurity, in my opinion, isn't necessarily what our birds need. We don't need to wear head wraps and booties when we go visit other coops. Our birds, as many other species, develop natural immunity to adapt to the current risks. Mm-hmm. Nature calls. Biosecurity isn't necessary. We should be breeding for the genetic qualities that endure the risks that are perceived as biosecurity threats. Biosecurity, to me, is a way to allow commercial operations and big ag to stop the spread of disease while maintaining large breeding populations to feed the masses, rather than breeding for genetic qualities to naturally endure common poultry health issues.
Well, you know, everybody has an opinion, and they're entitled to theirs. I don't see it quite as such. I've seen birds that were bred for. Look, you will never know how good your breeding for resistance program is until you are met with a very virulent strain of a particular virus or bacteria or whatever. You know, all of these things come in different forms. If you have a particular type of Marek, some Marek viruses are actually lethal. What I mean by that is some types of the Marek virus, your birds get them, they get crippled and everything else, and unless, you know, you can feed them and water them and they continue on. In other cases, the bird contracts the disease and in a very short period of time succumbs to the disease, done, dead, boom. So, you know, it just depends on where you are. Avian influenza is another one. I don't know if you'd have enough birds to breed for resistance to that, that it comes on so quickly, so suddenly. Look, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, and I'm not going to argue the point, but biosecurity is important, and whether people like it or not, that's the way you will control these things over a period of time. And breeding for genetic resistance is fine if that's what a person is interested in doing. but that's not necessarily how the world works. It hasn't got all that much to do with Big Ag. Big Ag just doesn't want you. We went over it a week ago, did I not?
Right.
Over all the statistics from the knee crops.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it was quite stunning, actually. So, these would be from flocks that were possibly bred for genetic resistance as well. Genetic resistance will only take you so far, in my opinion. I don't think that you can stand there and tell me that I can throw all the rocks at your little glass house and I won't break the window eventually if I throw a big enough rock. And they're out there. For instance, just take the avian influenza, because it is so unique and it changes. And so you're breeding for resistance to avian influenza, and there are so many different strains of it possible due to the makeup of the virus. How many birds you want to lose to it before you finally think you've got resistance to all of them? So it's like I say, people are entitled to their opinion. I don't push anything down anybody's throat. They're their birds. They can do as they see fit. When it comes back to bite them in the butt, and maybe in their lifetime it never will. Who knows? But it's the same old thing that I've been dealing with for the last 50 years that I've been playing around with this stuff, and that is that you don't know what you've cured if you don't know what you have. And that therein lies the problem with all of the innuendo about different products and different diseases that were cured by certain things. And I still go back and talk about the ones where people claim they had CRD and they were able to cure it with penicillin. And anybody that knows anything about how penicillin works and how the mycoplasma organism is with no cell wall knows that penicillin works by destroying the cell wall. So if there's no cell wall, how could it possibly work? It can't. So you obviously didn't have the mycoplasma, but you had something that was bacterial that you cured or took care of or arrested with penicillin, but it wasn't mycoplasma. But you'll run around and tell everybody that, and that's how those kinds of things, get started. So, it's like breeding for resistance to mites. How are you going to do that? And at the same time, when you breed for these different characteristics over a period of time, you end up giving up something to get something. Genetics is just that way. You don't get everything you want when you breed birds. If it were that easy, it would be, one or two generations. You'd have everything you want, in a particular breed. I was talking to a good friend of mine who is a 30-year breeder of Polish, and his take on it is on a particular mating and stuff, if you don't get out to 400 or 500 birds being hatched out of that grouping and then take the best of the best, you're wasting your time. And, that's not me speaking. That's somebody that's been doing it for the last 30 years and has been a successful breeder of Polish, both, I don't remember the different colors, but white-crested black and what have you, and Bantam and large fowl both. So, it is what it is, and people are entitled to their opinion, and if that person's happy doing that, that's fine. But when they go somewhere and something happens and it comes back to bite them, they'll never tell you. They never tell you the truth. People want to espouse all these kinds of things. I've been dealing with it so long, you can't get the truth out of people because they're ashamed in many, many cases to tell you the God's honest truth. And that's not saying that I haven't dealt with people that have been truthful. I have. But by and large, they are embarrassed to tell you that they made this huge mistake, and now you have to deal with it. So, it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me.
Let's go to the phone lines. Let's see. First caller we have with a question is calling in from area code 904. Area code 904, if you'll state your name and tell us what state you're calling from, please.
Hi, I'm Mike. I live in Savannah, Georgia, but from Jacksonville. How are you doing today?
Doing well.
Good.
Thank you. What's your question for Peter Brown?
Peter, my question is, this is the first time I've ever bred chickens. I've got a pair of silkies and another hen. And on the first of the year, we got some of the babies hatching. And just about over a week ago now, the one baby, little chick, her eyes kind of started crusting over. I started with VetRx and then also did a saline solution, kind of a wash for the eyes. The one eye now is fine, but the second eye is still kind of crusted over. And I put a picture of it on the comment area in your Facebook page. So it should be there for reference if need be, but I've continued to do the same thing, and the one's healed, but the one is still kind of giving me some trouble. So I was wondering if you knew what it looked like or kind of where I should be heading.
Well, most of the time with the with eye problems, you really need to put something directly into the eye from an antibiotic standpoint. You could try Vetracin. I've seen it, you know, it's like a 50-50 deal. It works pretty much by changing the pH and making it tough for things to live there. But at the same time, I've seen it where it's not able to clear, you know, the problem with this eye, crusty eye thing. It can be caused by any kind of bacteria getting into the eye. Where it comes from, your guess would be as good as mine, but birds pecking around on the ground or in a brooder-type situation, something hits them in the eye, starts an infection going, and, you know, that's basically generally how that kind of stuff gets started. Not saying that's how it happened in yours, can't tell for sure, but you need to put something in the eye. Do you have anything on hand, any kind of medication at all?
No, I don't. And that was going to be my second question, is where are the best places if I can get that online, or is it best to try to get to a local feed store and see where I would...
Yeah, because time with these things with the eye is of the essence. The quicker you get it done, the quicker it gets over with, the better off you are. I would head down to Tractor Supply or someplace like that and get a bottle of Thailand 50 injectable, and I would... do what we call nasal flushing, and on the nostril where this crustiness is, you'll take some of the time. If you shoot me an email, I can send you the directions. It's a lot easier than we're trying to get to a lot of calls here. But if you just would, it's chicken chicken Dr. Dr.
Okay.
And then the at sign, and then first FIRST. Date, STATE, vet, VET, supply, SUPPLY.com. That'll tell you how to do the nasal flushing and also to put a drop or so of the Thailand injectable directly into the eye without a needle on a syringe. Real simple to do, and that should clear it right up, I would say, in a matter of 2 or 3 days. The problem with eyes, if you let it go too long, you get an opaquish white film growing over the eye. The bird ends up blind in that eye, and it needs to be addressed immediately.
Okay, sounds good. Well, I'll shoot you an email right now, and I appreciate you guys' time, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of the day.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Caller, again, that's chickendr at firststatevetsupply.com. That's chickendr at firststatevetsupply.com. All right, we'll get you those directions that you're going to need. Very good. Thank you very much for calling. Great question. Hey, we've got another question, another caller here on hold. Again, callers go to the top of the line. And our first of the line, and we'll get you on air as soon as we can. So if you're calling in, if you have a question, 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. We have 50 available open lines, so there shouldn't be a problem with you getting through. Next caller is calling in from area code 803. 803, you're on the air. Please state your name. Tell us what state you're calling from.
Hey, I'm Layla from South Carolina.
Great, thanks for calling in. And what's your question for Peter?
Well, I have a chicken. She's about 8 years old, and she's a really big girl. I've started to notice that her toes kind of look like she has something along the lines of arthritis. So my question is, can chickens get arthritis, and what can I do to relieve her of the pain of her feet?
Okay, and you said she's a big bird. What's she weigh?
Roughly. I have no idea.
Okay, well, give me an idea. Give me an idea.
Probably 9-10 pounds.
Okay, all right, so she's a big girl. Okay. They don't get arthritis in the form necessarily that we do.
Mm-hmm.
But they do, joints wear out in them just as they do others or other issues with them, with their joints. I would suggest curcumin. Spelled C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, and you you want that in about 1,000 milligram capsule or tablet, whichever you can get your hands on.
Okay.
and you want to give at least two, maybe even three of those a day. So give it orally. They're real easy to do. Put in a piece of fresh bread and disguise it that way. Open her mouth. The big giant hole in the back is where she eats. Just shove it right down her throat. You will not choke her to death at all. She won't like it, but that's not the point. And come back in about 4 or 5 hours, do it again, and do it again at least a couple of hours before the before she goes to roost. And I think you will probably see some improvement in it. We've done this many, many times. And you also mm-hmm. want that product to have some what they call bioperine. It's B-I-O-P-E-R-I-N-E. The majority of the capsule or tablet will be your curcumin. Curcumin is the active ingredient in the spiced turmeric, turmeric being the whole root, curcumin being the part that really does work very, very, very well for a whole slew of these kinds of problems. As a matter of fact, at the Northeast Poultry Congress, I had a gal come up to me there who I had helped with a bird who had similar problems as yours. It was limping and so on and so forth. So it was an older bird. And we put that one on curcumin, and it fixed that problem pretty much. And she put her mother on it, and her mother's arthritis has gotten dramatically better. This product has a long, long history, both animal and human, and is well documented across the board. So that's where I'd start. If you can't find it, we have it here. I don't remember how many of them are in a bottle. I think there's 30 in a bottle for like $14.95 or whatever. It's not on the website, but you can send me an email. We could, you know, we could deal with that if you can't find it where you are.
Okie dokie.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All righty, another good question. All righty, again, if you were calling in and you'd like to come live and ask a question, please press 1 on your phone. And otherwise, if you're just listening and enjoying the show, that's fine. No need to do anything. Thank you very much. If you want to call in, 347-637-3237. Okay, let's head over here to our Facebook page where we had posted you were going to be coming on today. We did this yesterday evening, and we will go start going down the list here regarding some of the questions from our Facebook fans. And I see Mike's picture of his silky with the crusted over eye, so thank you very much, Mike, for posting that on our Facebook page. Let me get here back all the way up to comment number one if we can. Okay, here we go. Brenda asks, what is the best thing to put on the comb of a rooster or a hen who has a very large comb when the temperatures are low? I used Vaseline, but was concerned about putting petroleum products on them. And we talked about this before with Vaseline being petroleum-based and does concern folks. And there are some alternatives out there. I think you had mentioned one time BetRx, and then there's some, I want to say it's either glycerin or mineral oil that comes from the kit that Patrick sells. Tell us about those, Peter.
Yeah, VetRx is a real good one because of the oil of oregano and the camphorated oil that are in it. Stimulate the capillary blood vessels to expand in the comb and bring the blood to the surface. So that will make the comb warm as far as that's concerned. There is no surefire, beyond the shadow of a doubt, way to keep them, you know, if it's bitter cold, you know, you're going to have to supplement with heat or something somewhere along the line. I strongly urge folks to take a good look at these suite of heaters. We have them installed in our coop. Bear in mind, we only have about 20 birds in a quite large coop for 20 birds. So their body, and they're all bantams. So you know, we're not talking about birds putting off a lot of heat. And they, even though it's well insulated, there are no drafts whatsoever. You can't keep the temperature in there when it gets down here to almost. I think we're down to 7 degrees last night. You're not going to keep it, you know, much above 20, 22, 23 degrees in that coop no matter what you do. It's cold, it's cold, and that's the way it is. And so we have the suite of heaters in there. And I'm going to tell you, we have predominantly roosters, and even those that didn't like each other all cuddle right up under because they're not stupid. You know, I mean when they're let out or the lights are on in the morning, you know, they'll go about doing their little sidewalk acts. But other than that, you know, they get right up under those things, and we've got two or three of them put up in there now. I think there's a 16-inch, an 11-inch, and a 30-inch in two or three different places. And we also have some birds that don't want to go up there, believe it or not. They like to get down in the nest box that we've got there, and they like to stay there. But so I would seriously look into that. I know a lot of folks look at it and say, well, it's a lot of money, but I'm telling you, these things are fantastic.
They're getting better. Peter, did you happen to get the press release from Chuck?
No.
Okay. He sent me a press release, and I don't know when it's going to be actually released, but he... and it proves to me that they already are a small family company, him and his wife, but it showed me that they take their customers' concerns seriously, and they want to put out a good product. They've been putting out a good product, but they're making it better. There were two that I remember in the press release that they are improving on their unit itself. One of the concerns, not necessarily a complaint, and I even when I mention this weeder heater, when people specifically ask about it, I mention this as well, due to the manufacturing process, and I think it ends up being the glue that they use to secure this unit. When you first turn it on, it does emit a particular odor, and that concerns people because it's a chemical odor. And in this press release, he states they are changing what they're using for this, that the task will be the same, to eliminate that initial odor when you turn it on. I know you have them, so you know what I'm talking about. That was in the press release. Also, this has nothing to do with the use of the unit, but during shipping, they had very few, but they did have some, issues with the corners, the tips kind of cracking or breaking off during shipment. Not during use. And so they have totally redesigned the corners of every single unit they make, going from, I think, more of a pointed to a more curved. I showed a picture of the change in the press release, and they are upgrading that, even though it wasn't a mass issue. And so they are on top of this. And there was one more thing, and I can't – oh, I know what it was. There was some issues about the S-hooks being quite tight when hanging these things or mounting these. And so they have also changed the way that the S-hooks – mount to the unit to make it easier for installation.
Okay.
So those were three things that I'll forward that to you later today, but I was very impressed, and that I knew two of the issues, but I didn't know about the third one. But they, for their new design and new, they're addressing these and making this unit even better than it already is, which again just tells me that, hey, they are listening to the consumer. They want to have a jam-up product, and even though these things were minor, they did receive emails about these particular things, and they're fixing them. They're making this unit even better than it already is based on comments from users of their unit, so I was very proud of that. So I'll get that to you this afternoon.
Yeah, they're good folks, and what you know, I mean, there's really nothing comparing this to any kind of light bulb source that you would have. There's nothing nothing to break.
Right.
Now, you know, when it's cold out, you can just about hold your hand on the thing underneath.
Yes, I have.
You know, and it really doesn't burn. So it's a really, really good unit. Birds like it. And, you know, if you're looking for it to heat your whole coop, that's not the purpose of it. Not at all.
Correct.
That's not what it's meant for. This is meant just to keep the birds warm during nighttime hours and even the daytime hours. Look, when we went to New England, we had somebody watching our birds who was not a chicken person. They were interested in doing it and so on. And, you know, Tammy ran them through how we you know, feed and water and whatever has to be done, and head count and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, when it came down to, you know, should I leave them on, should I leave them on or not leave them on, should I tell the person, turn them on, turn them off, we just felt it was a lot smarter just to leave them on, and we left them on. Yeah. We left Thursday morning to go there and didn't get back till late Sunday night. They were on fine, and you know, yeah. Look, something could happen any time, but if something's going to happen, it's going to happen. But the point of the matter is that, and these were professionally installed. I had my electrician come in, run all the wires, and put them on a separate breaker and whatever. Here's the other thing: they only have, I think the biggest unit has just a little over a 1 amp draw. That's nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's nothing. Your hairdryer in your bathroom will
just about anything, yeah.
Yeah, just about anything. Your toaster, any of that stuff. You know, that's why most breakers are 20 amps. This is the I think the 30 inch is just a little over a half an amp draw. So the amount of power that you're using is minuscule. It's not even worth counting, basically. So we just opted to leave them on. That way, if there was any overnight chilliness or whatever, they'd be all taken care of, and that'd be the end of it. So it was fine. I wouldn't do that with a heat lamp.
No, goodness, no.
I wouldn't have done that with a heat lamp at all. Anyway, to get to the other part of this question, the Vetrex liberally put on the comb should help, certainly will help. We know that from the episode we did on the comb that it's highly vascularized with arteries, veins, capillaries, microcapillaries, and so on. So there's a lot of blood flow to the head, and the Vetrex will help bring that up. Also, Patrick makes that comb reddening compound, mm-hmm. and I never got around to putting it on the website, but I do have plenty of it in stock. We bring it to the shows, and I think the big jar of that's only like $9.95. And you do the same thing: you rub it on the comb, and it turns the combs redder and helps keep the capillary blood vessels opened up and the blood flowing to the outer surfaces of the comb. Those are the two things that I would suggest. The oils and the other things, I don't see where they're going to be very protective at all. And I know there are people that may want to argue the point. That's fine. What works for an individual, I'm not here to change anybody's train of thought. If you are using Vaseline or mineral oil and you're happy with it, that's fine. But there are a lot of people that are not happy with those things and have been burned by it before. And again, you know, when you get down to certain temperatures inside these coops and stuff, you know, you need to mitigate. We've talked about this too. Wind chill factor. You need to make sure there's no wind, even a little crack. When the wind is, I mean, around here last night we had 40, 50 mile an hour winds, and for a while, and it was pretty windy out here. And I wouldn't, you know, even the smallest of cracks will, at that kind of wind, will allow a lot of cold air to get into the facility. So you want to protect them as best you can. If you've got a ceiling that's real high, you may want to consider putting something in to keep the heat from rising up so high. Heat rises, cold air falls. So you're much better off, even if you didn't do anything, put a canvas up and keep that hot air that's down low from rising up high. Be better than absolutely nothing at all. So there's a whole lot of things you can do. Put your thinking cap on and make it work. If your building is not it's small and it's not well insulated, you might consider bales of hay or straw around the outside for the winter months. But there's a whole lot of things you can do, and we did a whole show on that whole thing,
yep.
So they can go back in the archives and look at the balance of it. But those are the two things that I would certainly consider doing besides looking into these sweeter heaters. And we have them. I have the 11 and the 16-inch on the website right now. Anybody that buys them, they'll be shipped freight-free. So.
Ship for free. Great. FirstStateVetSupply.com. All right, looks like we had another caller sneak in here, so let's head over to the phone lines, and we'll bring them live right now. A caller calling in from area code 740. 740, you're live on the air. State your name and what state you're calling from.
Hi. My name is Tanya, and I'm calling from Ohio.
Ohio, great. Thank you very much for calling in today. What's your question for Peter Brown?
I have been looking into doing like a whole food diet for my chicken, more so than a commercial feed. And I've done some experiments with some different things, mostly corn, oats, kale, And we added some diatomaceous earth, and I added fish meal. And at one point in trying to mess with the ratios, they actually stopped laying. So I did go back to a more commercial feed, but I wanted to know what kind of ingredients I needed to use in order to do that for them.
Well, I'm not a nutritionist, but we've been down this road before. You would be better off, in my opinion, to buy a commercial-made organic feed. And if you search around in your area, you'll probably find somebody that does that. So if you can find somebody, the closest one to me is over here in Virginia. and they make a commercial, or not a commercial, but they make their own organic certified feed. The problem, the biggest problem with a lot of these things is getting the right amount of protein, carbohydrates, and then almost all of them that are making their own feed, there's a vitamin, mineral, amino acid pack that has to be put into the ton of feed at the same time. And that provides, you know, all of the vitamins and amino acids that they wouldn't normally get out of the feed ingredients that you're putting in, because the feed ingredients alone are not enough. So along those lines, because we've seen it before, we've had people call in and have changed things around and were feeding them corn and table scraps and that kind of thing, and they were wondering why they weren't laying. Well, if I said you feed bread and water for about a month, I don't think you'd want to be running around doing too much work either. So it's a tough balance to get this this correct. But what's the purpose behind what you're trying to do? And I guess that's the is this one of those things where you're trying to go organic? Is that what it is?
Well, not just organic. In the area that I live in, there's just not a whole lot of different availability of or access to organic feed and those kinds of things. There are, like, you know, we just have a Tractor Supply, but our Tractor Supply doesn't have organic feed. The closest place to get organic feed is a couple of hours away. And even doing that, they only sell it by the ton. Well, I just have a small flock, so I can't use a ton of feed at a time. So I can get some different ingredients, individual ingredients. So that was more my idea. And I have noticed, too, that most of the commercial feeds, that they are basically just vitamins and minerals, and it seems like there's not a whole lot of actual, quote-unquote, food in the mix.
No, there has to be. No, you're wrong. Most of your commercial stuff is going to be a corn-soybean combination of the two. The protein is going to come from the soybeans, basically, and everything else, the energy part of it, comes basically from the corn. Now, they may swap things around a little bit, but your base diets are usually corn and soybeans, and then in that mix you'll find the vitamins are put in as well. They have to put it in. It birds would be deficient. And that's you know, we've run into this a zillion times with people trying to do their own. It's not that you can't. If you want to send me an email, I could probably, I know in some of my archived material in my personal document thing, I've got something, a formulation that you can figure out your own protein. See, getting the protein level up to where they need to be, then you need to know the value of the nutrients that you're going to put in. Once you figure out the nutrients that you've, in other words, what their protein and carbohydrate value or whatever is, then you can put it into the formula and figure out how many pounds of each you need and make your own feed. You can do that. So fish meal is not bad. The only problem with fish meal is a couple of things, cost and, you know, from a commercial standpoint, and then, you know, using that as your base for your protein, you get fishy eggs, fishy meat. So, you know, if you don't care about that part of it, if you're not eating the eggs or you're not eating the carcass of the bird, then that doesn't matter either. So it would be a matter of getting the right amount of protein and then going with it from there, because that's what's going to really sustain them down the road, and they should go back to laying eggs.
Okay.
So if you want to do that, it's chicken, C-H-I-C-K-E-N, doctor, D-R, and then the at sign, First State Vet, V-E-T, supply.com. Be glad to send
it. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Great. Thank you very much for your call. Very interesting question. I know that occasionally we hear from folks on Facebook and Twitter that really want to grow their own feed for their chickens, and that's the biggest hurdle, is knowing exactly the amount of each ingredient to have a good nutritionally balanced feed for them to continue their lay and to keep them healthy. And a lot of times people will overlook that, and we understand that organic feed sometimes is not available in areas. Sometimes, I think in Atlanta, last I checked, just a 40-pound bag of organic feed was upwards of $35, maybe $40, so it can be very cost prohibitive for a lot of people. It gets expensive, and so a lot of people think, you know, I've got some land, I can maybe grow this, or I have access to this from this neighbor, I have access to this from where my husband works, or things like that, or I can get this VitaPack and add it, and so maybe I can make my own as well. And that's the tricky part. And, you know, we often talk about natural cures on this radio show many, many, many times, but there is credence to having a nutritionist with many letters behind his name and a group of them that developed this commercial feed for these big companies, the Purina, the Manipro, the Nutrina, the Do More, and that type of thing. And it's just amazing the amount of science that goes behind. So many times we'll hear people say, if all you feed on this entire planet is a bag of laying pellets, that is nutritionally balanced and is all that your chickens need. And we've run into many, many times on the show where treats end up being the culprit. And like Peter often has said, that let's face it, treats are for the owner. It's not for the chickens, it's for the, so the owner feels good about themselves. And
well, you know, I don't have a problem, you know, with a person wanting to do their own. I think it's kind of neat if you're up for the challenge. The issue
Absolutely.
Is, you know, and I think I can help her. I think I know where the thing is. I'm sitting here as you're talking. I'm thinking about where it is. And it's a formula for figuring out, you know, if you've got X amount of this and X amount of this, how, you know, you do the math on it. It's pretty simple math. And then I think she should actually talk to a nutritionist, and I'll mention to her, she's in Ohio, she could call Ohio State, get a hold of one of their nutritionists, tell her what she's interested in doing. They could give her a hand with it, too. She can tell them what ingredients that she's able to get her hands on and that kind of thing. So that there are ways around it. You just have to go about it right, and she should be good to go once this is all, you know, all settled and figured out. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, commend her for wanting to do that and go the extra mile for her chickens. That's great. Alrighty, we're going to take a short commercial break. We're talking with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. And there'll be more. We'll be answering more of your questions from Facebook right after this short break. So stay with us, folks.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. Do you provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at sweeterheater.com. That's sweeterheater.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And we've got a nationwide live webinar that's going to be taking place in February. In fact, I believe it's Thursday, February the 27th. And I'll be joined by a couple of others, and we'll be offering this nationwide webinar all about keeping your flock healthy. I think it's titled something like Spring into Healthy Chicks or something like that. And I'll be starting to promote that on Facebook and Twitter and on the radio show. It is free for anybody to attend. I believe it will be 2 p.m. on Thursday, February the 27th. We'll be broadcasting live, kind of a little scary, from inside CDC headquarters in Atlanta with both CDC and USDA representatives. So I have to mask up and glove up when I'm just anxious to see all the kind of security I'm going to have to go through to enter that place, because being in Atlanta all my life, growing up in Atlanta, and driving by the place and seeing the place and the security upgrades I've had recently, I'm like, this is going to be very interesting. So, oh, me, that's coming up, and I'll share that experience on Facebook as well. But let's get back to Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. Peter, you are back live with us. Let me get over here to the Facebook page, and we will go down the list. Actually, the next was, just curious, what's the oldest chicken you've ever owned? And I know that you were friends with a gentleman who had the Guinness Book of World Records oldest chicken. It has since passed. It was a couple years ago when you sent a picture of the certificate from Guinness Records to me, and at that time I believe it was 21 or 22 years old, but since that has passed. So I don't know if that's been beaten since, or if anybody has tried to even register if they think they or can prove that they've beaten that, but I think it was, 22 years old, was it, Peter?
Right around 23, if my memory served me correctly. It was owned by Todd McWilliams from, I think they're in upper middle western Maryland, and it was a game chicken, and he put it down humanely because it just, you know, wasn't worth the, I guess he felt the overall health of the bird had deteriorated enough that it was inhumane to keep going with it, so he just put the bird down. But, yeah, he had, actually, I'd sent you the certificate on it because there was some questions one time about that, and I sent you a copy of that certificate. And
I was going through my photos, and I still have that certificate in my CW folder on the computer. So.
Yeah, and as far as we're concerned here, I think the oldest one out here right at the moment is right around that 9 to 10-year-old category, somewhere in that range, getting, if not close to it. The youngest is about 5. So we've got a fairly geriatric flock there. They're 5 years and up, and relatively healthy. They go outside and do the little sidewalk act thing every day. They're fat, dumb, and happy, well-kept, and it's about all you can hope for.
Yes, in fact, I think you have a sign over your coop that says, Scratch Grains Geriatric Center. And gotta love it. Thank you for doing that. And okay, we've got one here from Andrea. I have a well-bred silky that hardly ever lays. My other silkies are great layers, but hers are soft, and I cannot seem to harden the shells no matter what I give her. Any suggestions? So apparently hardly ever lays. When she does, is soft shell or no shell. Yeah. How can we help Andrea?
It's usually a vitamin D3, calcium, phosphorus imbalance. Silky's probably, from my perspective, from doing what I'm doing all the time and seeing, you know, what I see, and there may be people that will argue the point, and that's fine, but they have more anomalies than any other bird that I've ever come across, and it's just the way it is due to the breeding and so on and so forth. You know, all of that being said, the way to do this one here is to supplement with the AD&E powder in the water, and I would probably go with the AD&E as a supplement, then the VitaPro on top of that, mix them all together. I'd throw some Replimin and some A-Lite in there as well to well round it out, and other than it being some sort of freaky genetic thing that can't be fixed, that should fix it. And, you know, if everybody else is, here's one way you have to look at it. If everybody else is eating the same food in the same basic environment, then you can almost rule out those things. The only other thing that I would question is with this particular bird, how much is this bird eating compared to its pen mates? For instance, if this bird is extremely timid and shy and very subordinate, she may not be able to get her fair share. I have run into this recently where we took a bird who was not faring out so well, was on the thin side, was very timid and shy, and took it and put it by itself, and it really bloomed out really nice and started doing the things that, you know, chickens are supposed to do. So, because I get that same question when somebody calls me or emails me about a bird that is ill and starts to back away from food and water, and I want to know as best as can be determined then, because we want to, you know, you don't want to have to tube feed a bird unless you have to. I'm a big fan of letting them eat on their own as long as they're eating, and seeing them peck at the food every now and then is not eating. So you have to evaluate things for what they are, but if the bird were mine, I would check that portion of it, and I would also supplement for a little bit and see if it can't straighten out, you know, barring any other problems. I mean, there's no worms, no mites, no respiratory issues, no gut issues, droppings are nice and firm and what have you. Then it becomes an issue of absorption of these things. Sometimes some birds just can't convert them. I've seen years ago when I was in the commercial sector, we had several flocks of birds that came down with rickets just because they were unable to convert the vitamin D3 that was in the feed, and when we supplemented it in the water, it went away. So some of these things can be fixed, some can't, and that's the approach that I would take with this particular thing. I think you can be successful in doing that.
Very good. We've got another one here. This is an often frequently asked question. Terry wants to know from our Facebook page, how can you tell the age of a chicken? She adds, by maybe the thickness of their legs and feet with a question mark. I've adopted some chickens, but I have no idea how old they are or if they will still lay. You know, are they too old? Should I look for eggs? Or is there kind of a way that may be close to accurate? Maybe even she may be even willing to have a wives' tale of how she may be able to age these birds she's adopted.
I don't know of any way to truthfully tell, other than, you know, the overall appearance. Sometimes you can look at make some guesses by the thickness of the legs and that kind of thing. Whether or not they'll lay eggs or not depends on what they're eating and their overall environment, day length, as far as lighting is concerned. But if they're layers, how many eggs they're going to put out for you, I don't know. But, you know, if they're layers, they usually don't stop laying 100%. Ours out here, every now and then you'll find an egg, especially in the summertime, you'll find, you know, two or three eggs. Like I said, we don't have that many hens compared to roosters, predominantly roosters. Out of the 20, I'm going to say close to a dozen maybe, or right around there, of roosters. And So, you know, we don't get a whole lot of eggs when we do get them, and we don't even care at this point. This frog
right.
is meant to reproduce. We're not going to eat the eggs and all that kind of stuff. So it's a no big deal for us. But, you know, trying to guess the age of them can be difficult because you can't even tell by looking at the pubic bones because it's only going to tell you whether the bird's in production, out of production, that kind of thing. So you really can't tell. I don't know of any real credible way to tell because if you looked at our birds out here, you'd never guess that we had any of them that were as old as they are. I mean,
Let me ask you this: with all the necropsies that you've done in your time, Peter, is there a way internally that would give you a guess?
It might, from the standpoint that when you do a necropsy on a female, you'll be able to see the ovary tree, and that'll tell you. You know, you could probably make a guess from there that they're, you know, beyond their laying years. Because, see, if you took a bird that was in production today and you euthanized that bird and you opened up the body cavity, you would see the egg, ovum, whatever you want to call it, the yolk, make it easier, that bird was going to ovulate today for today's egg. You'd see the one that for tomorrow or the day after that and all the way down to microscopic follicles that you know, are hormonally controlled as to their growth. And so, you know, you would see all of those things on the inside. The absence of those totally would tell you that the bird's probably pretty well along. And, you know, you could probably make some sort of guess based on that kind of information. But if you've never seen it before, inside a bird, it's like a huge, big yellow blob. And out of that blob comes all of the ovums that will ever be ovulated by the bird during its lifetime. And they, like I said, you'll see the one that was going to be ovulated today. That may be in, and you can look at the size. If you look at the size of the one today, you can judge when the other one is going to be ovulated. If it's you know, a third of the size or half the size of the one that was going to be ovulated today, then you know it's going to be a day or two before that one's going to come out, so she's not an everyday layer. So you can make some assumptions. There isn't any question about that. How accurate it's going to be at the end of the day, I couldn't say. But, yeah, you can look at them. You can see production or not production and so on.
Okay. Lisa has a question here from Facebook. I would like, oh, by the way, folks, if you call in, you go to the front of the line. 347-637-3237. We've got several callers already today. Again, that's 347-637-3237. When you call in, please press 1 when instructed to do so, and we'll see you in the caller queue. Hey, Lisa says, I would like to know more about coryza. I think I may have this in my flock. I am using gallimicin in the water. That's all I got.
Okay.
I don't have symptoms, I don't have signs, I don't have anything like that. I just have, she wants to know more about coryza. She thinks she may have it, and she's right now using gallimicin in the water. That's all I got.
Okay. All right, coryza is a bacteria. Haemophilus paragallinarium is the disease organ. The old terminology for it, they used to call it roup and that kind of stuff. It spreads, it has a cell wall, so it's well protected outside the bird's body, so it readily spreads bird to bird. Generally what we'll see is the cheesiness in the eyes, the swelling in the eyes. You don't see it on every bird. There's a misnomer out there, it's been out there for years and years and years, about if they don't have a stinky breath then they don't have coryza. The stinky breath is caused by a secondary bacterial infection. It's not caused by the coryza organism itself. So you can have coryza without the smell, and oftentimes you will. One of the deciding factors without a laboratory diagnosis is the conjunctivitis in the eye, runny nose as a general rule, possible smell, no smell, rapid spread from bird to bird, and that kind of thing. Usually, as a general rule with CRD, we don't see the spread as rapid, okay, because of the fact that it has no cell wall and doesn't live well outside the bird's body, and the mycoplasma is different in another way than the coryza organism in that the mycoplasma is host-dependent, meaning it gets all of its nourishment and everything else from the host. So without the host, it doesn't live very long. And we had gone over on a show that we had done in relation to this, that and this was a study out of the University of Georgia where two of the world-renowned experts reside, Drs. Clevin and Glisson, that are experts in this particular field of mycoplasma. But by and large, outside the bird's body on inanimate objects, you're talking about it living for a very short period of time. It will spread bird to bird, but it's much harder for it to spread that way. The majority of it is usually considered to be spread through the egg. I know we're talking about mycoplasma now, but I'm just trying to give you some differentiation here. Coryza is not spread that way through the egg. It's spread bird to bird and will spread fairly rapidly. Gallimiasin would be my first line of defense against this particular one, along with vaccination. Vaccination, while not being 100%, is quite effective, up in the 90th percentile plus. It's a two-shot vaccination. It's a killed vaccine. It's a half a cc under the skin of the neck or directly into the breast muscle in the meaty part of the breast, not the shallow part of the breast. They would be done about 4 to 6 weeks apart. That's pretty much it. It's a tough disease to get rid of. Some birds get the disease and get over it and they're carriers. Others get over it and they're not carriers. Our general rule of thumb here has been for many years when treating something we think is coryza, we usually run the gallimiasin for 14 days, and then we come back and immediately the very next day and give the first shot of coryza vaccine. We wait the 4 to 6 weeks, come back and give the second shot, and 2 or 3 weeks after that, any bird that's giving you trouble, got to go. You cull, and you cull hard, and you can't look at a bird and say, well, it's getting better. Nope. If it hasn't gotten better now, it's not going to, and you try to pick out your carriers by doing that. And by vaccinating once a year for this particular disease, you can, in my opinion, because I've seen it done, you have to be diligent, and you have to be a tough culler. You can't sit there and say, well, that one's getting better. Nope, because they're not going to get better after all of that, more than likely, and the best place for them is off your farm. So through medication, vaccination, and heavy culling and continuing to do so, you should be able to clean a flock up. Does it mean you'll get every carrier? No, but you will have it pretty much under control, and it can take a little while to do that.
Okay, great. No, good information, and thank you very much for going through that and the comparisons and the whole nine yards. Hopefully that will help her get a hold of this and try to identify and treat it. Next question, and several people posted about this, so I'm going to nip it all in the bud all at once. The initial question was, what would cause brown specks or spots on my white eggs? But I'm gonna add kind of a second question in there because it was asked at least twice on our list, and that is, since we're talking about eggs and things you see on them, brown spots on white eggs, what could cause that? And more importantly here, two questions at least were asked, why do I see blood streaks on my eggs when I collect them or blood spots on my eggs when I collect them, and should I be concerned?
Well, let's address the blood spots first because I think it's the easiest thing to do. On the outside of the shell, it can be caused by a number of things. Generally, it's nothing to worry about, but it is something to be cautious about. This can be from the egg being too big for the bird's body size, and when it comes out, really has to strain to get it out, and it causes a small tear. Don't forget, this tissue is very soft and very delicate to be passing an egg over, and so that in itself, is a problem from time to time, especially when the eggs start to get big. So you might have a small tear or an abrasion, and it just makes a streak of blood. After that, you don't see anymore. It heals itself up, and it takes care of itself. The other reason that happens is sometimes eggs will have rough spots on them. And again, we're talking about real soft, delicate tissue. And when you run that sandpapery egg across it, you're more than likely going to get some abrasion to that oviduct, and you're going to end up getting some blood you know, on the outside of the egg. Again, nothing to worry about unless it's a continual everyday thing. And, you know, it may go on like that and be okay, and then the other part of that you have to watch out for is that birds that start really producing these really humongous eggs, they end up being what we call a blowout, and you get part of the oviduct coming out of the vent, and then you've got a problem. So keep an eye on it from that standpoint. Sometimes just breed-related, you know, some of the commercial breeds will put out some really big eggs, and you know, some of them are prone to this a prolapse problem, or what we call a blowout. And sometimes it can be fixed by taking the bird and putting it in a dark out box where it has no light, withdraw feed and water for 24 to 48 hours, depending on the size of the bird. I probably wouldn't do that with a bantam for 48 hours, but I certainly would do it for 24. Then you would bring them back on plain water with nothing more than scratch grains. And what you're trying to do there is you're trying to tell its body that it does not have the nutritional capacity any longer to continue to lay eggs. And you want the bird then to, you know, to try to rest and try to reset itself and hopefully come back laying smaller eggs rather than bigger eggs. But there's no guarantee on that either. And it's a methodology. We've been successful with it on the show. We've talked about it a year or so ago, I'm sure. And but it's just one of those methodologies that you can try to control a situation that if it's allowed to go on, you end up having a bird that, you know, you can't salvage it because of the constant prolapsing of the vent. And then, you know, if that happens in a flock situation and the others start picking on it, and then you really got a problem. And the only other, you know, remedy then is take that bird out of there and go through this whole process. And after the bird has stopped laying eggs, then you can bring it back on no more than 8 hours of light a day. The whole thing is a pain in the neck because most people are not set up to do this. You know, if you're working a job and you've got a handful of chickens in the backyard and you've got to do this every day, it's a pretty tough deal. So that's a tough thing to deal with. As far as the speckled eggs with white, the causes can be a lot. It can be medication. It can be genetics. There really isn't, in my opinion, a total answer to that. It's just something that happens. We see it more in older birds, where there'll be a speck of white, you know, as far as the shell is concerned. Nothing to worry about as far as that's concerned. If you're worried about it, I don't think I would worry. I'd worry more about the other one with the blood on the outside than I would the one with the few specks on the egg. You know, could it be nutritional? Possibility. Again, goes back to, you know, when we answer these questions, we don't know what they're eating, what kind of treats they're getting or not getting, and so on and so forth. But I would certainly try to limit treats of any kind where I was having any kind of egg laying, egg quality issues, and things of that nature. So that's about the best we're going to do with that one.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you so much. Going down the list here, because we have a lot, I want to answer some that may be most pertinent to folks. Here we go. This one comes to us from Connie. I have a younger girl, about time to start laying. She has swelling in her nasal sinus area. She says swelling in her nasal sinus area. Any idea on what this could be? It was suggested that I start her on antibiotics and her water. We did. The swelling is going down. Wondering what caused this, and is it over?
Okay. I have no idea either. If it's one specific bird out of a group, we have to look at it then being something that isn't contagious or as easily a contagion as some of the other diseases may be. How she picked it up, I don't know. If the bird is free-ranging outside, it makes the mystery even harder to figure out because you don't know what they've been into all day long. But I would, she didn't mention the antibiotic. If they're making headway with the antibiotic, I would certainly continue that, but I would also urge that they do some nasal flushing, and if they have the Thailand 50, the nasal flushing is good for that. And if they want to get a hold of me, I'd be glad to give them the directions for the nasal flushing. It's pretty simple, pretty straightforward. They can use the Thailand 50 in the eye to help speed up this process. And if she's close to laying, it could be this bacterial infection that'll keep her from laying. Okay, just depends. Some of them will lay with it. Some will upset the system enough that they won't be able to lay because of it. So I think that's the thing that I would do. I would continue with the antibiotic if they're making progress, and I would address the eye directly. It's very difficult to get enough antibiotic in the water without killing the bird to address the eye issue. You're better off to put an antibiotic in the water to take care of any issues that would be in the trachea, the lungs, the air sacs, and that kind of thing, and then treat the eye as well, because of the it's kind of like watering a tree. Tree's 50 foot tall. You got a gallon of water. Top's not going to get very much, and it's the same issue here. Putting it in the water isn't going to put much up to the eye. Just to draw another analogy, when we talk about bumblefoot, which we've done a zillion times on the show, you have to use an antibiotic that's going to get you out to that foot. And most of the time, Keflex or Cephalexin, probably one of the few that's going to really do a good job. A good soft tissue type of antibiotic is what you'd want to use for that. So kind of like the same thing for the eye. You wouldn't use the Keflex, but you would use something directly into the eye. And the Thailand works. There are other products that we sell on the website for it as well. So there's a number of different ways to address that.
Very good. Deborah asks, this is a good question, because people getting started this spring will see, medicated chick starter, non-medicated starter. But her question is medicated chick starter enough for baby chicks, or should I add antibiotic to the water for the first 3 days? I don't know where she gets this for the first 3 days and why that's relevant, but that's her question.
Well, let me address this thing, because this is a conversation that came up at the Poultry Congress, and I laid it out for those folks there as well. A medicated chick starter, as far as I know, okay, really just refers to a feed that has amprolium in it.
Correct.
And the design of that feed, because people will say to me lots of times, well, that stuff's junk, it doesn't work, and blah, 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 blah. Well, it's designed not to prevent coccidiosis. It is designed to give them a low-level exposure to the amprol, and so that it will allow them to build some natural immunity without the coccidiosis overwhelming them. Now, that being said, there is a lot of resistance worldwide to the amprolium product, basically because it's the go-to product all around the world. Now, the commercial poultry industry, as far as your broiler chickens, they use a totally different product with a different base. They don't want coccidiosis, period, because it saps the bird's performance. They're looking to put on weight as quick as they can, as economically as they can, and a bird that has coccidiosis is not going to do that. It's going to eat more, take longer to put on weight, and possibly cause them some condensation problems in the processing plant. So they don't want it at all. So their approach is totally different. But they do use Amprol because of the cost of the ionophore, that's what it's called, type of a feed additive that they use for coccidiosis. They'll withdraw that 4 or 5 days, maybe a week or so before the birds go to the processing plant, and then they'll dump Amprol on them to try to keep everything in check before they go to the processing plant and save a few dollars that way, the Amprol being much cheaper than the other product. But they, too, are running into problems, okay? Again, these things, and I've said it before on the show, and I'll continue to say it, every organism wants to live, okay? Whether it be human, animal, insect, bacteria, virus, protozoa, whatever. And that's exactly what happens here. These things become resistant to these things, and they are running into it now. A lot of them now are going to the coccidiosis vaccines, and they'll work that one until it doesn't work and waiting for something else to come along. So The idea of a medicated starter is to allow the bird to have exposure to coccidiosis without overwhelming the bird. That being said, with the resistance that's around, with some of these strains of coccidia, the Brunetti, the Tenella, the Maxima being nasty, destroying the intestinal lining and causing bleeding and all the things that these things can do, sometimes it will overwhelm the starter. What I would suggest is that she keeps some sulfadimethoxine on hand and at the first sign of the symptoms of coccidiosis, then supplement that with some sulfadimethoxine for 5 to 6, no more than 6 days, and that should take care of that particular situation. And again, you're going to let them go back to building some natural resistance. If you don't let them build some natural resistance to it, when they are exposed, they will blow up. And by that, I mean, I don't mean they'll explode in your yard, but you will have cases of coccidiosis that you wish you never saw, because there'll be no resistance to it whatsoever. So when they are exposed to it, this is why when people grow birds on wire and then turn them out, they start having problems with it, because the bird has never been, they have to have access to their own droppings, irregardless whether it's the vaccine that you're using or whether it's the medicated starter. That's how it is. It's picked up in the droppings, goes back into the bird, comes back out, and that's how it works. And by controlling the amount that's in the droppings by using the medicated starter, that allows them to build some natural immunity to it. That's why you don't give it to them beyond the laying age, okay? Usually knock it off somewhere around 14, 16 weeks of age and let it go, then treat on an as-needed basis. And if your birds are in production, the only thing you can use, really, and still eat the eggs without any kind of withdrawal time will be the Ampril. The good thing about the Ampril is you can always boost the dose up in hopes that that will help keep things in check if it's not working otherwise. It's a very safe product. It's not a drug per se. It is what we call an antagonist that ties up the thymine in the bird system that the oocysts that are causing the coccidia need to survive. They ingest the Ampril. It's not thymine, and they end up dying. The problem is there's a lot of resistance to it. As far as medicating anything with an antibiotic for 3 days, drop that idea, lose it, get it out of your head. Don't even think about it. Medicating for 3 days with any kind of an antibiotic just invites antibiotic resistance and will do more harm in the long run than you would expect. So that one I would throw out the door. And it's medicating chicks before they, as soon as they get out of, in the brooder right away with all kinds of medications is just foolish. This thing that you think that you can put a medication in the water and you're going to ward off mycoplasma or anything else long term is ridiculous. So.
Got it. No, thank you very much for that advice. Next question, that we hear a lot about chickens picking on each other and pecking on each other. This young lady has a Polish hen, and let's see if she did say hen or if she said rooster, but she's got a Polish, and her other chickens are picking and pecking on her head, and to the point to where she's got a bald spot on her head now. So since you like them and recommend them a lot, I'm going to assume that we'll probably go down the pinless peepers route with this one.
Yeah, I would. I think it's a smart way to go. It's non-invasive to the bird, not going to hurt them at all. And probably what I would do is I would put peepers on all of them and see if that doesn't arrest the problem. It usually does, and either that or take, if you can find the one that's, usually there's one bird that starts it. If you can take that one out of the coop for a while and then put it back in later on, it'll lose its place in the pecking order, and it might stop it that way. But I would look at the pinless peepers, and they're not overly expensive. They're easy to put on. They're probably going to change the way we present them. They've been on the website for a long time. Some people buy them, some don't. But we're probably going to give you like 20 of them and the pliers for $20. And as a matter of fact, anybody that wants that, it's not up on the site that way now, but I would give you 20 of the peepers and the snap ring pliers to go with it for $20 plus whatever the shipping would come to. So that's what I would suggest. Because, see, the anti-pick lotions don't work. It's just like putting bitter apple on your furniture and your dog chews the leg off the best chair. my son just got a English bulldog, beautiful little dog, and he got the bitter apple and sprayed on a couple of things the dog was chewing on. He goes over there and licks it. So, I mean, you know, so much for that. And most of the anti-picks just don't work, and birds will go right after them and that kind of thing. So it's a problem.
Great. Sounds good. Thank you for that. I pressed the wrong button on the mute. Another question here. Good question. And though we cannot indulge in what you're working for, a project that we have yet to announce, but kind of a related article, you know what I'm talking about. But mm-hmm. Are you still there, Doc? Hello?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. Her question is, she's getting ready to do her first hatch. They're planning her first hatch, and she wants to know if you recommend a still air or circulated air incubator for that.
There are people both sides of the fence, and incubation is a true art science thing. The science part of it being pretty much figured out for you with the temperature, humidity, blah 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 blah. The art part of it comes in where you finesse these things to get them to hatch the way you want them to. Technically, you can hatch in your oven if you can control the temperature properly and the humidity and so on and so forth. So it isn't necessarily rocket science, but it is art and science. I prefer, for most people, I think it's better off to have the circulated air. And that allows the circulation of the air in between the eggs and keeps the temperature from getting too hot. Lots of times birds will succumb to the the overall temperature in an incubator might be 99 to 100 degrees, but it may be well over 100 degrees between those eggs. You have embryos growing in these eggs coming close to each other, raising the temperature there. But you have an average temperature between 99 and a half, 100 degrees. So the circulation and of the air between the eggs keeps those temperatures from becoming too high and causing embryo mortality. One of the reasons embryos end up dying in the shell, I mean, one is a zillion different reasons, but is the fact that they get too hot. They get too hot, they dry out too quick. The moisture loss from an egg needs to be controlled. That's why you have humidity, and that's why you have the temperature. And it's a controlled loss of moisture from the egg. Now, that being said, you get into how long were the eggs held before they were incubated. Generally, an egg will lose somewhere around give or take, a 0.5% of moisture for every day that it's held, okay? And that's being, held under reasonably good conditions. So you've already got some moisture loss prior to the incubation process itself. So all things being said, I think a person would be far better off with a circulated air incubator. And if you want to take it one step further, just real quick, not to belabor this point, but if you look at the Brinci incubator, the Brinci made an octagonal shape incubator. I believe it's octagonal. Doesn't really matter. Because their research showed that they were able then to get better and more even airflow and temperature between the eggs. And they did this by putting these little measuring devices in between the eggs, and they could actually tell you what the temperature was in between the eggs during the incubation process, and that's a huge thing. We're seeing it done more and more now on the commercial side, where people are, if you were hatching grandparent stock for the commercial side, the birds are worth a lot of money, so you want to make sure that your incubation is correct and the fans are up to speed and all this kind of stuff when they use these big walk-in type incubators. Well, they have sensors put all over the place in between eggs and specific egg trays, and so on and so forth to monitor the temperature. And if you think about it, if you're using an incubator that's either square or rectangular or whatever, you have a fan blowing air into a rectangular or square space, the upper corners and the lower corners and stuff are going to have less air. It's just the way it is. So with the shape of the Brinci incubator, it flows all down and around and comes back up through, and it really gets through everything. So I opt for the circulated air. I think that the person would get a much better hatch with that. Does not mean that you could not, with due diligence, take a still air and do the same thing. But the cost difference is not that great. The attention to detail on the part of the person doing the incubation is really where the rubber meets the road, so to speak.
Thank you very much for that description on the benefits of using both of those. Eric has a question on our Facebook page. I don't know if we've ever had such quite a question, but very interesting. And he says, what is the best thing to give sneezing chickens? Every chicken I have ever given Thailand 52 died. That's it. That's all we have. So he's not having really good luck with Thailand 50. Every single time he's given it, that chicken died. Whether that was he was treating what he should have treated with appropriately, or the dose, the amount, we don't know. He's got sneezing chickens and is really cautious about giving Thailand 50 because he doesn't have a good.
Yeah. He didn't go into any detail, so I'll throw a whole bunch of things out there, and then he can, if he wants to communicate with me through email, that's fine, at chickendr@firststatevetsupply.com. But a lot of folks want to take the Thailand 50 injectable and use it in the water and this and that and the other thing, and to me, I don't like doing that, okay, getting the dose down right per bird and so on and so forth. And there's a whole bunch of stuff on the Internet. You can find anything and everything you want on the Internet. It's always 100% correct. We all know that. They don't want to buy the Thailand water soluble because of the cost of it, you see. And my interpretation of things, if the injectable was meant to be put in the drinking water, it would come with directions for doing so. That being said, we don't know how much of the Thailand 50 he was giving to the birds. We don't know their size, their age, their weight. By and large, I look at a quarter of a cc once or twice a day for a bantam, half a cc once a day for a large fowl. You probably could go to half a cc two times a day if the bird's large enough. The problem with most folks, as you heard in the earlier one about the medicated feed, should she put an antibiotic in the water for 3 days? Ludicrous, crazy idea. Don't know where people get all this stuff from, probably the Internet. Or somebody else that's doing it improperly as well. So we don't know the length of time that he did it, but when you look at injectables and you're using the Thailand 50, you're looking at a 5 to 7 day deal. I would only use an injectable on a bird if I had one bird that I was treating, maybe two. To stick a bird every day for 5 to 7 days or twice a day is painful for everybody, the person administering it and the bird receiving it. Okay? Much easier to do these things in the water. And if I had to, if I had birds that were sneezing, a couple things that I would do. If it was one bird, I'd do the nasal flushing to start with, and I would put Oxytet in the drinking water. Cheap, easy to do, very effective if you use the right product. We've talked about this before. Everybody wants to run a Tractor Supply, buy the $7 bag of duromycin, and put a teaspoon in a gallon of water and wonder why they're not getting anywhere. Well, if you look at it, it's 181.4 grams of total weight in the bag, but it's only 10 grams of active ingredient tetracycline in that bag. So what you've got is a big bag of nothing. If you take a bag of Oxytet, like the one that I sell, somewhere between $10 and $11, that on an active ingredient basis is equal to 10 bags of that type of product that you would get from Tractor Supply. And I'm not be damn a Tractor Supply. Something's better than nothing. That's not the point. The point is that's why you're not getting anywhere with what you're doing. The Oxytet has 102.4 grams of active ingredient and a total weight of 280 grams. So buying one bag of what I'm selling, even though it's a sister drug to the other one, it's oxytetracycline versus tetracycline, not a big difference. They're all the same family. But you're getting 10 times more for just a few dollars more. And so I would take that product. That would be my first line of defense, that and a nasal flushing together. So if you were to take the Oxitet, 2 teaspoons in a gallon of water, you'd really be doing something from an antibiotic standpoint. And then if there's a bird or two that's sneezing, you pick them up and do the nasal flushing with the Thailand injectable. And anybody that wants those directions can certainly email me, and I'd be glad to give them to them. It's not a big deal. Not a secret. But that's where I would go. And I don't know from the question whether the Thailand was killing him or they just died in spite of the fact that he was doing something for them.
Right.
You know, if they were dying from the Thailand itself, and that's the inference on his part, then I would say that he probably gave too big a dose for the type of size of the bird. If it was just because he wasn't getting anywhere, my guess is wrong dose, not long enough, and that kind of thing, or the method of giving it drinking water, so on and so forth. So I think that could be straightened out a lot easier. And then, you know, then if the Oxitet isn't doing it, you can always move up to the gallimiacin. And when you do that, you move up dollar and cents wise.
Gotcha. Okay. Nope. Very good and information. I need you to be able to shed some light on his question, especially since Thailand 50 and dead birds were involved. So thank you for that. We've got to take another short break, but we'll be back. We'll be able to answer a couple of more three questions or so with Peter Brown on this episode of Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor and founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. We'll be back right after this short break.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
McMurray Hatchery is the world's oldest and largest rare breed hatchery. They have been providing their customers quality poultry since 1917 and have more than 110 different breeds to choose from. Be sure to sign up for their weekly special email at mcmurrayhatchery.com and receive a $5 internet exclusive coupon to use on your first internet order. McMurray Hatchery, the world's largest and oldest rare breed hatchery.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Hey, tomorrow, Thursday episode, we will welcome Richard Prudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. That'll be tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on Blog Talk Radio. Hope you can join us. Okay, next question here. Paige wants to know, I have one girl who has suffered from gleet since I got her. I've tried the standard treatments for it. She doesn't list what they are, but I just can't get rid of it. Any suggestions? One site said copper sulfates, but that scares me because there's a toxic warning on it. Peter?
Okay. We've been down this road before. It's trying to decide whether or not this is an actual case of vent gleet or is it a case of salpingitis, which is an oviduct infection, which would cause the same basic type of symptoms where you would have the white, smelly dropping that sticks to the feathers and becomes quite nasty and very tough to get off. This could also be an infection in the lower end of the intestine, or what we would call the colon. So either one, this could be caused by a problem with a bird who had bronchitis and damaged their kidneys. It could be caused by a bird who consumed too much of a sulfa drug and damaged its kidneys. So it just depends. She didn't mention whether the bird ate a lot or drank more than it ate, and that kind of stuff. So trying to get to the bottom of it is a little bit tougher than just saying it's ventrally. Trying to pin it down, by asking, the right questions it would certainly give us a little bit more of a of an insight into just what the disease problem is and, how we might go about straightening it out. But if she's interested, again, she can shoot me an email at chickendr@firststatevetsupply.com, and we'd be glad to, call her or have her call us and discuss it and see if we can't put our finger on it and maybe try a couple of things. You know, it might be something just as simple as some oil of oregano. The copper sulfate, not a big deal if you use it properly, good product for a whole slew of things. Sometimes it'll work for some sauerkraut problems, other intestinal problems. All of those things have to carry some sort of warning because people have a tendency to think that a little bit is better than what they were told to use. And but we've never ever had any trouble with it, copper sulfate, especially the acidified copper sulfate. So I don't think that's a big deal, nor is it a concern. And I'd like to know what she's already tried. There's a whole slew of things that you can try. Anything from using amoxicillin to using copper sulfate, oil of oregano, neomycin, bacitracin, and oxytet mixed together as a cocktail sometimes will work depending on what the problem is. But if it's true ventricle, which would be basically a fungal infection of the cloaca itself, we would generally then look at using Otomax. That generally will work. If it is a oviduct infection, then we start looking at using some amoxicillin in fairly high doses in hopes of getting rid of it that way. So the answer isn't necessarily going to be clear-cut with this because we need more information to go on, but those are the standard remedies that we usually ascribe to here, and in most cases can be effective with those. So it just depends.
Okay, perfect. Perfect information. Thank you very much for that. This may be the last one, depending on the length of the answer. Laura states she's going to capon some of her roosters. Will this change aggression issues when they are older?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. She's going to caponize them. She's going to take away the organ basically responsible for the production of the testosterone and stuff, and they should put on weight, and then they should certainly calm them down. And if they don't, she didn't say what kind of bird they were, but there are methodologies and ways to do that. The perfect peeper route is one. Another is to carry them around for a little bit upside down by the legs. While it sounds cruel, it gets their undivided attention and shows them that they keep this crap up, this is what's going to happen to you. And they get the message after a while. Every now and then you get a bird that like humans, nothing you do to them can change their attitude, and they're just going to continue on to do it. But it should drop the aggression level quite a bit because it's going to do away with the testosterone level for the most part.
Okay. Very good. Maybe we can squeeze this one here. One more here. Let me find one. This is. We always see this on the blogs and forums, and so we can nip this in the bud here, and this will wrap it up for the show. Leanne wants to know: is it okay for my hen to eat cat food? They have plenty of layer feed, but my hen chooses to eat with the cats.
Yeah, I would say the problem with it is if it's a cat food that is high in salt, and chickens and salt don't get along. So I would look at the content because you know, the reason for feeding a complete feed is chicken feed, it has everything, all the vitamins, electrolytes, minerals, including salt, the protein, carbohydrates, and everything else, as we ascribed to earlier. We were talking about that kind of stuff with a woman with the mixing her own feed deal. So eating too much salt can cause right ventricular heart failure in birds or a disease called ascites, and it becomes an osmotic pressure differential in the venous system. What that really means is it's forcing fluid out of the vein system into the body cavity. It's an amber-colored fluid, and they start to drown in their own fluid, similar to congestive heart failure in a human, where a person who's starting to fill up with water starts to actually sound like they're underwater. And a chicken would have trouble breathing, panting, walking more upright, waddling like a duck. And in severe cases that I've seen, they would almost walk like a runner duck, almost straight up. And what they're trying to do is breathe, get that air, because there is no diaphragm in a bird like there is in a human. So the chest cavity and the body cavity are all one unit, and what's in one spot comes to another, and diseases spread systemically very quickly, and because of that. So now, if I could prevent it, I would. You know, people have done it. People do it all the time and get away with it. And it's that one day when, as the bird gets older or whatever, they can't tolerate it that you'll end up having those kind of problems. It's not a good idea, and I'm not a proponent of it by any stretch of the imagination.
Okay, very good. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for another awesome episode of Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. It looks like we've got just under 4 minutes to go. So, Peter, I want to say again, as always, thank you very much for joining us on this special Wednesday episode. Folks, Peter normally joins us every single Monday, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. He is known as the Chicken Doctor, has over 50 years' experience, and has a degree in poultry science, as well as has a founder and owner of the First State Vet Supply. You can visit firststatevetsupply.com. A lot of the topics and things we talked about today, the products, you can find on his website, from endless peepers and all the way down to a emergency medicine kit that he's developed to actually help you save some money. The idea there is, instead of you buying a full bottle of something that has an expiration date on it that will eventually expire and be no good if you don't use it, and it is very expensive, he has an emergency medicine kit with smaller amounts that's more affordable, which we hope you don't have to use, but if you do, you have it and you can use it immediately, and then you can order more if you need it. So there's a lot of thought process that goes into that emergency medicine kit, $24.95. Not first aid, but first emergency medicine kit. So take a look at that while you're over there. Peter, thank you very much for joining us today. Hope you have a wonderful weekend, and we'll look forward to seeing you next Monday, my friend.
Okay, Andy. My pleasure. Alrighty, I enjoy doing it. Yep.
Yeah, and you always give so much good information. It's a really hot show. Everybody loves it. Big listener turnout, and everybody's very, very appreciative for what you do and the experience you have and the comments you make and the help that you help with every single Monday on the show. So we thank you, deeply thank you for all that you do for us. Thank you very much, and we'll see you on Monday. And, folks, that's going to wrap up another show, Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Again, tomorrow I will welcome Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. And if you'll give me a second, let me see what the topic's going to be. I think I have it over in my email. So give me just a second. I'll scroll down so you can add it to your calendar if it's something that will interest you. Let's see. Cord wood flooring. Cord, and that comes to us from Back Home Magazine, issue number 128, cordwood flooring, and that goes along with Richard, who is basically our homesteading, living off the land, living sustainably expert here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. So we want to make sure that you're interested, that you listen to the show tomorrow, always a good show, and of course, no show this Friday. Also, visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. Make sure you enter the Ultimate Chicken Coop Contest for January. Prize package close to $3,000, and you've only got 9 more days to enter. Gotta love it. Thanks for tuning in, everybody, and God bless.